welcome back to the NAGB's Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm your host for this evening, Amanda Coulson, and I'm here tonight talking with two wonderful women about the Caribbean Development Bank and all they're doing in the region to support artists, to support the development, to give them a platform to show their work. And recently they had a biennial, and Sonia Farmer was one of the grant recipients. So Sonia, welcome back to the Blank Canvas.
Thanks for having me again.
It's always lovely to have you. So tell us a little bit about your project and what the grant means for you. And also right before the break, Mariel spoke about the mentorship that took place like while you were creating the work. So tell us a little bit about like how you got involved, how you found out about it, and give us the journey.
Sure. So in April of this year, I heard about this call for the ICE, Caribbean Visual Arts Biennial 2021, right? Which Marielle explained was coordinated by Anime Carib, Project ICE here, and supported by the Caribbean Development Bank and the Cultural and Creative Industries Innovation Fund. So they put out a call for works, and the theme was statelessness. Although the call like encouraged intersections with environmental sustainability, climate change, migration, COVID-19, and gender violence, and also like sought projects that engaged visual arts with science and technology and engineering, as well as community outreach throughout all of this. And so I thought it was a really unusual call for works. It took me a little while to really understand it, but I thought, well, it sounds like an accelerator, an incubator for a visual arts project. So I wasn't sure if I should submit, but then Marielle did encourage me, and I had a couple questions, and then I just submitted, and I thought, well, we'll see how it goes. And I was really excited to be one of the 24 artists participating. The project that I submitted, I wasn't too sure. I mean, it's evolved so much since April because through the accelerator, you know, we were presented with a variety of workshops. We even, speaking to the mentorship from Antonius, we had like even a little in-person meeting with the Bahamian contingent, you know, safely with masks and everything at Project ICE in this sort of indoor-outdoor space, where, you know, we were encouraged to learn about each other's work and maybe even collaborate with each other. I spoke to a couple of folks involved, and in fact, one of the people who is involved at ICE, I can't name them because they want to be anonymous in the project, but they actually spoke to me as a participant in my project. So that was really exciting. So I made a lot of really interesting connections, and that was facilitated through Antonius. And then also on a wider scale, when we took these sort of like workshops through the like VAB accelerator itself, a series of like 1 or 2 weeks of workshops and meetings, it was really interesting to like meet lots of other visual practitioners in the Caribbean. I didn't know anyone else, so it was really cool to learn about their work and what like other projects people are focusing on within these areas, because like, you know, yeah, these are really, really pressing issues for our region. And I was really excited to see how like, you know, these areas of basically like social justice and, you know, our climate disaster reality were incorporated into visual arts practices. So
sorry to interrupt. I'm just saying it's really interesting how, you know, you said, you know, you met other artists and you spoke to other artists. I think something that's come out of this moment in time, and I'll ask Marielle this question later about doing things live or not live, but the online life has really allowed a kind of interesting connectivity and even intimacy. Because you're sort of often in people's homes when you're talking to them, right? It's not like going to a biennial or going somewhere where you put on your game face. Like, so during the pandemic, we all kind of got used to like, you know, you don't even know if I'm wearing pants at this point. You know what I mean? Or I'm in my pajamas. And so you got kind of relaxed talking to people in a way that maybe you wouldn't have if you'd been in a formal situation. So it's nice to hear, again, this connectivity of like artists discovering each other, because I think that's one of the hardest things in our region is for artists to learn from each other, because even on our own islands, we're sort of disconnected sometimes. You know, you're working in your studio on the East End and someone's in their studio on the West End. we don't have a kind of studio building like in some cities. So it's really nice to hear that. And I'm sort of wondering whether that will be able to continue somehow, even once the pandemic is over, with this kind of bringing of people together in this sort of quite intimate way.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, a sort of aspect of my project was gathering collaborators far flung, like across the globe, who are connected mm-hmm. through like a specific kind of experience or lens. Mm-hmm. And that project, like just by its very nature, does have to do with bringing together scattered people mm-hmm. to learn from each other's experiences. So I know that it will continue through my project. And I, you know, this project being supported by SIF has been like, it's really provided me with the ability to build the foundation for this project from which to grow. And then most importantly, to compensate collaborators for their experience and the expertise mm-hmm. that they're bringing to this project. So I'm really like a facilitator in this project. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I should tell you about the project.
So I was going to say, that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, so
tell us about the project.
Yeah, so the project that I developed started off as this idea of a free online archive of oral histories that center experiences navigating Bahamian citizenship laws and protections. Mm-hmm. And it's evolved through the support of this grant, like through the, you know, the accelerator itself. I developed, like, how can I grow this project and support this project? Like, how can the oral histories be contextualized? And the grant also has allowed me to expand in this direction, where another major part of this project now is that the archive is supported by an educational framework of interactive resources so that people can learn about, yeah, so people can learn about like the emergency of citizenship in this country, because mm-hmm. it's in crisis. So, yeah. So, through the accelerator, I was able to just really like develop what is this project. It comes out of my existing creative practice as an artist, where I have engaged the community in projects to do with the gender equality referendum from 2016. So I made a piece in 2015 ahead of the referendum, but about a year or so after it was announced that we would have a referendum, and then it kept being put off.
I remember.
Right. So the piece was called Electutangs, and it was an interactive polling station or voting booth that I set up in the Central Bank at Central Bank Art Gallery as part of their open call competition every year. I got an honorable mention that year, which was very exciting. And
it was a great piece.
It was fun. Yeah. Everyone who attended was able to go into the polling booth and vote on the four bills that were being put forth to be amended to create like more gender equality and the way that our citizenship laws are passed down, and also create supposed to create more protection against discrimination based on sex, which, you know, anyway, there are a lot of actual issues within all four of the bills. And the biggest issue being that one of them could have been voted yes and the rest no, and that would have potentially created even more inequality in our the way that we pass on citizenship. But anyway, that's a whole other, I am learning a lot in the process of putting this project together. Sort of dispelling the myths that I already had about how that actually wouldn't have brought so much equality into our citizenship laws is like one of the things that I'm confronting.
Yeah, well, a lot of people said, again, they voted against it because of the way it was written, right?
Not as many as you would think. Mostly it was just co-opted. The narrative was co-opted and politicized and very problematic, but very interesting to expose the attitudes that we have as a nation about citizenship as an exclusive right.
What's quite funny, what was the funny part of your piece was, because I think that's why it was so successful as well. It was interactive, but also it was kind of humorous, because you went into the voting booth and you got to vote, and then you put your vote, you put your, you know, ballot in a box, but the box was attached to a shredder. So basically your vote just got shredded. And, you know, it was basically saying, you know, it doesn't really matter what you think. And it really doesn't matter, because we saw that also from the gambling referendum, which was that people voted. But even though the people voted for one thing, the government just went ahead and did something else anyhow. So
yes. So that was all in the thinking of that. And I ended up using the shreds after we actually had the referendum, which, by the way, I was away when it happened and I couldn't vote I was near Chicago, and I, you know, when you're a student abroad or something, you can go to the Bahamian embassy or consulate to cast your vote, but you have to be, you can't just be away. You have to be.
Yeah. And you have to be registered if they give you enough time. I don't want to derail the show onto that again.
But like, anyway,
my daughter was just away for this, and she should be able to, she should have been able to vote in this election, but she couldn't because they didn't give anyone enough time to get registered.
No. Yeah. And also, so by having this provision in place, we are actually disenfranchising the very people who could benefit from voting, right? Because these women would be away having children, away with foreign spouses. But anyway, like you said, let's not derail. So, so I used those shreds to then make a series of voters cards. I make paper by hand, so I pulped down the shreds, the ballot shreds, and I made some paper, and on that paper I printed some blank voters cards, and I made a piece where I for every month after the referendum through to when I exhibited the piece, was about 18 months later, I would put a thumbprint of my menstrual blood onto the card, and I would write, "I am a citizen of this nation." It was kind of like a very intense response. And then I started thinking about, what if I could like mail these blank voters cards to people who are like, what if I made this a wider community effort and response? And so that's how this idea actually germinated, was through this idea of these altered voters cards that I could send to Bahamians who were like living abroad and who were affected by these citizenship laws. And I first thought that it would apply really to just women, you know, but then like, I've done a lot of reflecting on how citizenship matters don't just oppress a single group of people, but rather like what we're seeing is that when like one of us or a few of us are oppressed, like all of us suffer, right? Mm-hmm. So like this exclusive good of citizenship in this country is a huge crisis, because even by just disenfranchising like one group of people, we just are like screwed across the board.
Yeah.
So that's how it came about. And I thought, I'd like to really just interview people. And I think that this comes from my journalism background. I sit down with folks who have been affected by like citizenship laws and discrimination in this country, and I just talk to them about their experience. And Amanda, you know about that because you actually agreed to be one of my first guinea pigs. You know, I reached out to about 20 people to see if they would be interested in like, I mean, I have nothing to show for myself, right? I don't have the project ready yet, especially when we were in the accelerator. I was just figuring it out. And I was like, if I could just start talking to people and seeing where this goes, I know I want to create an oral history kind of archive with these experiences, but I want there to be like multiple points of entry. I'd like to talk to people who've experienced statelessness, who are stateless, people who have experienced like disruption to their lives and their sense of identity and their family and their marriage and their children through these laws. Like, yeah. I mean, even speaking to people. Just
for the visitors, when I first 6 months I lived here, when I would come home with my as a fully Bahamian, 100% fifth generation Bahamian, my kids, because I married a foreign dude, my kids, when I would come home, they'd give them 2 weeks to stay in the country on their passport. When I walked over when I came into the country, they 5 and 8 years old, and they'd say they'd get a 2 week stamp, and I'd be like, where am I sending my kids in 2 weeks? Like, yeah. So that
but then
I think that this, you know, I mean, to see project, which is so incredible and so meaningful, you know, art becomes this vehicle to tell these stories and to kind of act as this kind of melting pot for all these different media, you know. So you're talking about your journalism history, and all of these are coming together in art project to communicate and engage people in a deeper way. And so I think it speaks to the significance of the arts and how we see the arts, and the arts as a kind of citizen practice. And that's what we really wanted to convey through this accelerator, that the arts can function in a very critical role in society, and that we should not be placing it on this peripheral, in this peripheral space.
Yeah.
And so I think Sonia's project really brings this point home and really, you know, exemplifies what we were trying to communicate in this accelerator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is I suspect why you won the grant. So that's a perfect way to end this segment. Sonia, we're going to come back to you. We've got to take a quick break. We're here talking to Sonia Farmer and Marielle Barrow. Marielle Barrow is the coordinator for the Cultural and Creative Industries Innovation Fund, otherwise known as CIF. You can get in touch with her if you're interested in learning more about that. She will give out her email in the next segment. That's to make you tune back in. And we just were hearing from Sonia Farmer, who was one of the recipients of a $5,000 grant to continue her research into this art project she's doing. And we're going to hear more from her after this break. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm your host for tonight. And you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break.